Newsbeat. Deadline, 1964. The WJBL News Department now presents the year of 1963 passing in review. What was 1963? It was the year of the big snow. Death stalked the area's highways and fire claimed a family in Spring Lake. Fish lost out, as did many schools and millage elections. But unemployment was down, very few labor disputes reported, Zeeland finally got water, crime was at a lull, and several major dedications were held. Yes, 1963 was a good year for many, but bitter for many others. ...1963 was the year of the big winter. Residents of the West Michigan shoreline began to feel as if winter would never end. 1963 started out the way 1962 ended, with snow, more snow, howling winds, drifting, more snow, clogged roads, accidents, more snow, stranded motorists, more snow, and so it went. Ottawa and Allegan Countyans kept thinking it had reached its peak, but still more came. It reached a point where roads in the area were completely blocked. Here is a road report presented by the state police at South Haven during the height of the winter.
At the present time, the roads are drifting very badly. Snow is blowing. Visibility is zero in spots. We have traffic tied up on U.S. 31 about a mile and a half south of Holland. We are blocking all traffic at the present time. We have had several accidents in this area. And we urge motorists not to drive unless it is an extreme necessity.
But it had to get better finally, and the area heaved a sigh of relief when it began melting in March. But this presented a new problem. On March 25th, the WJBL News Department reported that it's now mud and high water plaguing the area. This was followed by damaging winds as March bowed out, and friendly April made her appearance. And on April 2nd, the temperature soared to 78 degrees. A new record. The weather continued to moderate, but not without threatening to wreak further havoc. The latter part of April, temperatures dropped into the 20s, causing some concern for the tulips, but all was in good condition for tulip time. The weather was far from through for the year. On June 9th, capricious tornadoes leveled a service station just south of Holland and wreaked havoc in southeastern Ottawa and northeast Allegan counties. Another windstorm slashed through Belmont. The area had almost a week of severe weather and weather warnings in mid-June before Mother Nature decided to settle down for a while. The Holland area suffered through a dry spell, more storms, another dry spell, until in October, Governor George Romney issued a fire ban. Here is Ottawa County Conservation Warden Ray Ankney giving some of the instructions.
Everybody is cautioned to be very careful with fires of any kind. And smoking along the highway is permissible as long as the ashes and so forth are not thrown from the car.
But the dry season also came to an end, and once again, the WJBL area had nice weather. And in the latter part of October, the mercury soared to record-breaking heights, reaching a peak of 82 on October 15th and 16th. The temperature was 4.5 degrees above normal for the month. In November, temperatures turned cool again, but it was not until November 30th that the first measurable snowfall occurred. But then it apparently didn't know when to stop. And once again, the snow came down, reaching a peak of 26 inches on the ground on December 19th, a depth of 66 inches total since 30th of December by the end of December. Final statistics for 1963 will show the year to be an unusual one, with record high temperatures, near record snowfall, a cool summer, and a cold, cold, cold winter. ...1963 was not only the year of the weather, but also the year of the traffic death, especially in Ottawa County. Yes, 1963 was the year of death on the highways as Ottawa County set a new record for traffic fatalities. 34 in all. As one law enforcement official pointed out, the coffins of those killed lined up end to end would stretch over 230 feet or a city block. Ottawa County recorded 12 traffic deaths in 3 accidents, 5 in one, 4 in another, and 3 in a third. On April 28th, WJBL listeners heard this report from Doug Chapkus.
A 3-car accident between Holland and Grand Haven has claimed at least 4 lives and injured 2, possibly more than that. The accident occurred just a short time ago. We're reporting now from the WJBL news cruiser located right at the scene of the accident on US 31 at Stanton Street, which is about 8 miles north of Grand Haven. According to information that we have received here at the scene, one car was being towed by another one when a third car, approaching apparently at a high rate of speed from the rear, struck the car being towed, and at that time, the car being towed exploded upon impact. There are 2 bodies still in the car that exploded. The car is demolished almost beyond recognition. We just talked to one ambulance driver who said this was the worst he had ever seen a car demolished.
On June 8th, 3 more were killed in a 1-car accident on the Lakeshore Drive just south of Grand Haven when the top of a car was literally sheared off. But the worst of the year was saved for October 5th when 4 Holland teenagers and a young East Grand Rapids lad was killed in a 2-car collision on Riley Street north of Holland. And all of this came after April 4th. Prior to that, no traffic deaths had been reported in Ottawa County. The city of Holland recorded its first traffic fatality for 10 months on May 9th. The driver of the car, which struck the young bicycle rider, was subsequently convicted of negligent homicide. Allegan County was not without its tragic accidents either. On May 24th, a 2-car collision near Saugatuck claimed one life. A 7-year-old Holland girl died when hit by a car near her home August 28th. A Douglas woman was killed over the Labor Day weekend. 2 young men from the Grand Haven area were killed November 5th in a car-truck collision on Highway 31 just south of Holland. And thus it passed in Ottawa County and Allegan County. Over 50 persons will not be on hand to greet the new year today, all because someone was careless. Was it all in vain? In most area homes, Christmas Day dawned bright and early. A day of joy, a day of happiness, a day of peace. But for relatives of a Spring Lake family, there was no joy, no peace, no happiness, only sorrow. For an entire family of 6 had been wiped out by the searing flames of fire which swept their Spring Lake home. Earlier in the year, 3 persons had died in fires in the Tri-City area, including 2 in the weekend of January 12th. But not all the tragic fires were fatal. More than 600 students were left without a school in Grand Haven when the central school burned down the morning of January 28th. Cause was believed to have been a defective heater. WJBL listeners heard central principal Lamont Dirksey tell that nothing had been saved.
I'd say that practically everything was destroyed. I noticed the firemen were trying to get in one of the rooms on the first floor, and they came out with a couple of books, but that is about all that has been salvaged.
On the night of July 4th, those late to bed, and the early risers were greeted by an orange glow in the western sky on the south shore of Lake Maketawa. Loss was estimated at $150,000 as flames roared through the Maketawa Bay Yacht Club. On March 18th, fire destroyed a feed mill of the Hamilton Farm Bureau. Bureau manager Andrew Lohman tells what was destroyed.
50 feet by 120.
And how high does the building stand?
About 40 feet.
What did this building contain?
It's the feed plant for mixing feed for the farmers, and storage for feed ingredients, grains, and complete setup, mixers, shelling, crushing, grinding of feed, mixing.
An automatic alarm sounded when heat built up in the structure. Lohman now tells where the fire is believed to have started.
Started in the north end of our south elevator, south feed plant.
A familiar landmark, the old McMahon School near Spring Lake, was destroyed by fire on February 22nd. The well-known Fruitport Pavilion and Wharf on the shores of Spring Lake felt the wrath of fire on January 4th. Fire damaged the Holland Wire Products Company June 3rd. Damage was estimated at $8,000 in a blaze at the Wenzel Restaurant and Grocery near Saugatuck January 12th. Several homes were also burned down along with barns, and raging grass and brush fires plagued firemen during the dry season. But fire, weather, and traffic were not the only tragedies of 1963. A business was almost destroyed by botulism. The fish industry along the West Michigan shoreline was almost destroyed by a botulism poisoning scare in October. And at year's end, the industry had not even begun to make a recovery. Two Knoxville, Tennessee persons died that month of botulism E from tainted fish. Health officials tentatively tracked it down to a Grand Haven fishery. Two Kalamazoo residents also died. There were several other deaths and cases of illness later. But news on the business and industry front were not all bad. The Holland Economic Development Corporation got into high gear. The beginnings of a million-dollar tourist resort, Carousel Mountain, opened in December. Howard Johnson announced a $1.5 million motel project in connection with its restaurant on Business 31 South in Holland. However, at year's end, the project was being delayed due to financial problems. The project windmill bonds had been approved and are being prepared for sale as soon as they are okayed by a state office. Holland Furnace was a plaintiff and defendant in several lawsuits, and rumors kept going around that the company would close down completely. Another such story is making the rounds at the end of the year, but company officials deny it. A Holland Industrial Park was approved, and several industries announced expansion. News on the labor scene was mostly good, with General Electric, Chris Craft, and Holland Color all announcing contract settlements before strike deadline. Unemployment hit a 3- and 4-year low in September and October, then leveled off towards the end of the year. Radio station WJBL made several announcements. First, new studios south of Holland, a new salesman and news director, resignation of the current station manager and salesman, and being named official weather station for the Holland area. Some area schools, mainly Holland Public and Hudsonville, had hard times getting the public to see their side of the financial picture. Holland was turned down twice by voters, but the Hudsonville district took the record three times, and the second came after the school board threatened to do away with kindergarten, interscholastic athletics, and several other major items of the curriculum. Allendale School District voters also rejected a 5 mil hike. Grand Haven District got an okay of a $3.5 million bond issue on the second try. Included was money to rebuild the central school. West Ottawa was more successful. The district got voter approval of a $1,200,000 bond issue the first try. The federal school district continued to be a controversial section of land. In June, district voters rejected annexation to the West Ottawa district, and in September followed through by rejecting attachment to Holland. In the same election, Holland residents also rejected a swimming pool for the city. It was in the good old summertime when the Grand Haven dance permit controversy started anew. In March of 1962, Police Chief Richard Klimple had opposed the dance permit ordinance. And when the Snug Harbor Tavern asked for one in June of 1963, Klimple renewed his opposition. Klimple expressed his views in this exclusive interview with WJBL News.
I was not going to attend this council meeting tonight until I had heard this afternoon that the council was going to discuss a policy involving dancing at the Snug Harbor Tavern in Grand Haven. I had been called into several meetings recently, the last one being Friday, where it was indicated to me that this was going to be a hot issue and that it might come to the asking for my resignation. In the event of a denial on my part, for a dance permit in any tavern, the applicant has a right to appeal to the Liquor Control Commission. Neither I nor the council should take this responsibility. I don't feel any city ordinance or city policy should jeopardize the position of any city employee and restrict the law enforcement officials from carrying out their duties as prescribed and indicated by the state laws. If the council feels that we are not doing a proper job as a police department, then I am ready to resign and leave this job, here and now.
Huge crowds turned out for public hearings and council meetings during the summer months, and finally got tired of the hassle between the city council and the police chief. In August, citizens called for an October referendum. The council said okay, and as a result, on October 1st, by a margin of 550 votes, Grand Haven residents okayed the issuance of dance permits. WJBL News asked Chief Klempel if he would approve the permit now.
In the event that they met the requirements, which they did not meet last time, yes, we would approve it.
All day I faced a barren waste without the taste.
Sealand residents were beginning to think they were living in the middle of the Sahara Desert as the city continued to be plagued with water problems. The prolonged dry spell in July hurt the city of 4,000 badly, and lawns began to have that parched look. Residents were banned from sprinkling their lawns, and at one point it looked like the city might be completely out of the precious clear liquid for a while. But the promise of all the water the city could use was like a carrot to a rabbit dangling just before its nose, for the Holland-Zeeland water pipeline was near completion. And finally, on August 24th, water began flowing into Zeeland. The water question continued to be a hot one throughout the area. Wyoming and Grand Rapids fought over it, with Wyoming finally deciding to build their own line without anyone's assistance. Ottawa County had a water proposal which was turned down by Wyoming, and at the end of the year, an Ottawa-Kent County, Grand Rapids-Wyoming water pipeline proposal was under consideration. Crime news in the area was extremely slim, as major stories were few and far between. But the year was not without its excitement. On April 12th, a lone armed bandit held up the Marley Bank. A few hours later, Sheriff Bernard Grison of Ottawa County, along with Detective John Hempel, captured the man in a wild chase. Here is Sheriff Grison with that story.
At about 2 o'clock this afternoon, I was proceeding west on the South Shore Drive, west of Holland. And prior to this time, I had some difficulties with my police radio, and I had the only information that there was a bank robbery in Morley, and a red Ford was involved. I spotted a red Ford, and I radioed into the office for the license number of the car believed involved in this breaking or in this bank robbery, and turned around, and this was the car, and the chase began then in a easterly direction back in towards the city of Holland. He swung south on one of the roads and took several small blocks trying to ditch my car. And finally, we got back to South Shore Drive and swung south, north, that would be just south of Lake Makatawa, and hit a few blocks in there and swung back onto South Shore Drive and was headed back west. He proceeded west at a very high rate of speed. I would estimate between 80 and 90 miles an hour with several cars on the road. I couldn't say offhand just exactly how many cars there were. He went as far west as the old Saugatuck Road, where he swung south, and he nearly overturned at the old Saugatuck Road and South Shore Drive, and that's where the fast pursuit actually took place. At this time, Detective Hempel had swung into a position to gain in the chase, and together we chased this car down the old Saugatuck Road, I would say about 3 to 4 miles into Allegan County. We were hitting speeds of 100 to 105 miles an hour. At this time, I felt my brakes, and my brakes were gone due to the heavy wear that they had received down around the blocks of South Shore Drive. And I radioed this to Detective Hempel, and he proceeded on the side of me at that time. And together, I stayed behind the car, and Detective Hempel got on the side of it, and putting our guns out the window, the subject decided to come to a stop.
On May 7, 30-year-old Bernie J. West of Holland was sentenced to 15 years for the robbery. In February, Holland City Treasurer Alden Stoner was relieved of his duties after a shortage of funds was discovered in his office. He was subsequently charged, declared mentally incapable, sent to the state hospital at Ionia, and released, all before the year was over. 42-year-old Howard Vinniclausen of Holland is currently under indictment for the selling and possession of stolen cars. Teenagers made the news when in mid-June, deputies made a raid on some 75 to 100 unruly boys and girls at a beer party near Grand Haven State Park. Ottawa County deputies closed the file on some 30 burglaries along the West Michigan shoreline when they arrested three Muskegon youths. Three Chicago area residents were picked up in May for the armed holdup of a restaurant in Douglas. The fateful day, November 22nd, 1963. The time, about 1:30. WJBL News was working on the Howard Vinniclausen story, which wouldn't break for 2 weeks yet, when suddenly five bells sounded on the UPI teletype indicating a bulletin. Two words came over: Kennedy shot. Two words which started what had to be the year's biggest story. As word of the president's death spread, a gigantic shockwave spread over the area. The Holland area, which voted against him in the 1960 presidential election, could not help but admire him. Business was suspended. His death brought these reactions from Hollanders.
The news of the president's violent death is shocking to all of us here at St. Francis. We feel his loss greatly, and we pray that God gives to all his survivors the grace to bear this heavy cross. We feel that this country has lost a great president.
This is certainly a tragic loss to Christendom, to have a Christian president shot. And this is also a tragic loss to humanity, for here was a man who, regardless of the cost to him personally or politically.
It is hard to find words, but it is even harder to say them. President Kennedy represented the finest of American ideals. Born wealthy, with great personal talent, with every educational opportunity, he devoted all this to helping those less fortunate than he.
The assassination of our president this afternoon is a terrible, terrible thing. I know this has happened before in our history, and I suppose we will somehow have to take it in stride, but it is still extremely shocking to me.
Holland, join in all mourning the untimely passing of President Kennedy. They extend their heartfelt sympathy to the members of the Kennedy family and pray the Lord will give them strength and comfort in this time of grief.
Memorial services were quickly set up throughout the area, and the Holland area grieved with the rest of the nation. 4 days later, the ordeal was over as President Kennedy was laid to rest in Arlington National Cemetery. The playing of taps was his final epitaph. Other deaths saddened the area during 1963. Included was the founder of Holland's Tulip Time, Miss Lida Rogers. Ottawa County Sheriff's Deputies Marvin Nelson and Keith Averill. Hudsonville School Superintendent Clarence Sycama. Dr. George Goris, pastor of the Granville Christian Reformed Church. Conservation Officer Lyle J. Gates. Holland Associate Pastor J. L. Veldman of the Third Reformed Church. John Vandercock, founder of the Holland Inner City Bus Lines. Prominent Holland businessman Louis Padnas, and Zeeland pastor Vincent Vanderwerf of the Haven Reformed Christian Reformed Church. The story of Norman Nelson, South Haven city manager, ended on the Labor Day weekend when his racing car went out of control at the Hartford Speedway and crashed, killing the 41-year-old man who had just been named city manager in January of this year. He has been succeeded by Leonard J. Harris. Dr. Erwin J. Lubbers left as president of Hope College in Holland, and Dr. Calvin Vanderwerf was inaugurated new president. Roscoe F. Giles of Middletown, New York, was named executive vice president of the Holland Chamber of Commerce. Jack Lienhouse was appointed New Holland City Treasurer to succeed Alden Stoner to that post. Prominent Holland businessman John F. Donnelly became the one of the first three laymen named to the board of directors of the Michigan Catholic Conference. The Reverend Dr. Dick Van Halsema was named new pastor of the Central Avenue Christian Reformed Church. But the area was not without its good moments. The Consumer Power Company's new plants, Grand Rapids Water Filtration Plant, and Grand Valley State College all had their formal dedications. Here is GVSC President James Zumberg in his opening address.
To the members of the first faculty assembled here today, I should like to congratulate you on your decision to participate in the exciting challenge of this fledgling institution. To you, I pledge the full strength of this administration, and from you, I ask only that you recognize your role as public servants dedicated to leadership in teaching and research, coupled with a conviction that the academic stature of this institution lies in your hands. There are many admonitions that I would like to utter today, but this temptation I reluctantly resist. The years of learning that lie ahead will provide many occasions for such utterances. But this hour must not pass without recognizing the fact that you, as members of the first class to enter Grand Valley College, are the ones who have shown the greatest courage by enrolling in an infant institution. A college that has no glorious past, only a bright future. A college that has no championship football team, only a winning academic program. A college that has no endowment, only a multitude of friends. A college that has no accreditation, only the desire to achieve it. And a college that offers not the right to higher education, only the privilege of learning.
Festivals and fairs had their most successful years in history as huge crowds turned out for the Ottawa and Allegan County Fairs. Tulip Time, the Saugatuck Festival and Venetian Night, the Hudsonville and Berlin Fairs, and the Grand Haven Coast Guard Festival. Grand Haven dedicated its spectacular new musical fountain. It was also a year of beauty. Lynn Saunders was named Miss North Ottawa County. Lene Rankins was selected Miss Hamilton in that city's first beauty pageant. Margot Hefia was Zealand's Progress Day's queen. And in Holland, citizens at the Civic Center on the night of June 15th heard this.
Our first runner-up, Miss Lois Dirksen.
...1963 had its happy and glad moments, but it also had its sadness and sorrow. This is not only the story of 1963, this has been the story of the past and a prediction of the future. For history will repeat itself as it so often has.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind, should old acquaintance be forgot and days of old lang syne.
This has been the year 1963 in the WJBL area. Many other stories of importance have been reported throughout the year. The new year, 1964, is upon us today. The WJBL News Department hopes that all your news in the new year is all good. Your reporter, Bob Edwards.
For old lang syne, my dear. We Oh.